We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man. I don't know about you, but yesterday was maddening. Falcons lose 38-6, and that final score is not indicative of how bad the Broncos beat us up. They won every facet of this football game. They were more physical than us. The effort wasn't there, and more importantly, the execution wasn't. And so now we head to the bye week, and we scratch our heads and go, Mike, where is this going? Because Raheem Morris and this staff have to figure out, and they've got to figure out pretty quickly here, and get us back on the right track. Now, we asked you earlier, what's your number one concern with our Falcons right now? We still have the lead in the NFC South, guys, but we have three more games versus teams with winning records left on the schedule.
Yeah, man, and we've 1-2 against teams that are over 500. So, you know, and that was against the Eagles. So, people that aren't Falcon fans go, yeah, that Eagles game. But, hey, you still had to go down the field and make the two-minute drive work, and he did, Kirk Cousins. But, man, it's disappointing. I know you said the offense because Kirk Cousins has not thrown a touchdown the last two.
That's not, Mike.
Yeah.
Look around the NFL.
Nobody's doing that.
2 weeks in a row, right, your quarterback, yeah, a veteran quarterback's not throwing touchdowns?
No, and, I mean, we're trying to find the answers. I mean, yes, number one, a great defense. It was living in your backfield. And once you get down like we did the run game, you just don't have time. You can't play catch-up. Not to mention they maximized the clock. They ran clock. So that's what made that three and out so brutal to start the second half, just when you thought maybe you could put something together. And then, of course, you get the stop on the fourth down on the throw to Humphrey, and then the NFL pulls one out that nobody ever seen. Oh, that's a catch now. Even Mike Pereira is like, that's not a catch. Wait, the NFL has instructed me, yes, that is a catch. Get the out of here with that crap. So anyway, just brutal day at the office. I'll still go with pass rush, even though Bo Nix, the ball was coming out. So I'll just maybe amend that to defense, because our linebackers and nobody could tackle 199 yards after the catch for Bo Nix yesterday.
That's a problem. And here's the other problem. There's two things right now that need to be addressed. One is hard conversations. And when I say that, if that means somebody's not playing, that means somebody's not playing. I don't care what we're talking about. Guys, we're at a point in the season where I need my best effort and my best team on the field. Kirk Cousins said this after the game about those types of conversations.
Again, you know, if I get in trouble and I get suspended here at the station, I don't do the apology and say, we really screwed up. I screw up. You, Kirk Cousins, and we love Kirk, and we love our conversations with Kirk, and he's been great. But I do notice when it's a bad thing, it becomes the we thing. He's got to own it. Now, unless Kirk Cousins is taking the high road and guys are running screwed up routes and guys aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, and there were bad penalties. Bergeron had a holding penalty, yep, and a false start. I mean, and that's a guy we never see get in trouble, which I guess is a testament to how good Denver is. But I'd like to see a little more ownership from our quarterback on it. You said it. You haven't thrown a touchdown in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's a bigger issue. Versus the Saints, 23 of 38 for 306, no touchdowns. L. Broncos, 18 of 27 yesterday, 173 yards, no touchdowns. L. I get that you were sacked three times in each one of those games, but that wasn't the bigger issue. The bigger issue is, where's the playmaking and the throws that we need to get us on the board? Now, with that said, here's my other concern, and nobody seems to be able to answer this. It's Dukes and Bell at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour is brought to you by our friends at Buffalo Wild Wings. It's Monday, guys. Buffalo Wild Wings, where B-dubs is football. Why do we continue to get off to slow starts? We've had three games now where guys have said, oh, we just didn't start fast. Why?
Yeah.
Seattle, Saints, and now this game. Here's Jesse Bates admitting as much. We better.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sold on Jimmy Lake as the DC in this thing. I mean, the slow start you just touched on, and even if it's not a slow start, it's then giving up a drive and a touchdown before the half. We've seen that happen this year. So and I don't get it. I mean, look, the Saints game, they made the adjustments. They got A.J. Terrell on Valdez-Scantling, then shut down, and then the offense couldn't work. So it just, you know, just a few weeks ago, real quick, full disclosure, after, you know, being down in Tampa and then following that up with a win over the Cowboys, okay, yeah, we didn't play a perfect game against Dallas. We let them get back in. But I'm thinking, hey, we're in a really good position here. We got the division by the short hairs. We're good. Now this team looks like a team that will lose in the first round of the playoffs, even if we have home field advantage. We don't pass the eye test. We got to play against a really high-powered offense in Washington. We got to go play up in Minnesota against Justin Jefferson and Darnold. I've lost all the goodwill and all the faith. I've lost a lot of faith in this team. These last two stinkers.
And here's the thing. For those of you who are driving around and you go, Dukes and Bell, man, we lost. No, it's how we lost.
It's a beatdown.
It was total domination yesterday. The game was not competitive, guys. This was like tune-out time at one point late in this game, because you're like, well, we ain't coming back. Like, you didn't feel that in this game. And so that is the concern when we start talking about we weren't even competitive
right
yesterday. What the hell is that about?
I mean, a guy said, why do we always defer? That's what you do in the college of the pros. So it's 21-6 at halftime. We get the ball to start the second half.
Let's go.
Touchdown, 2-point. We're right back in it. No, 3 and out. You do absolutely nothing. You know, and then we get to this receiver core thing, and now Darnell Mooney's got a hamstring. Hopefully that gets better with the bye week.
Man, I'm not even saying it.
But Drake London, just 3 receptions on 7 targets. You know, it wasn't like, you know, Cousins was making accurate throws all the time either. Ray had 6 for 46. I mentioned earlier, Kyle Pitts only had 3 targets for 1 catch. So I don't know if I don't have the full film or the 22, as they say, looking at the whole field. I don't know if Pitts isn't open or what, but Pitts has got 6 catches in the last 3 games. He's got to be a bigger factor, period.
Yeah. Give credit where credit's due. Vance Joseph is the defensive coordinator, guys, for the Broncos. He's really damn good. And the fact of the matter is, we told you all week this Broncos defense was legit. And then they lived up to it. And the crazy thing is, we score 6 stinking points in this game. Now, here's the other thing. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. We're going to let you hear from Kirk Cousins coming up in 10 minutes. We'll let you hear from Jesse Bates as well. We'll do both of those coming up here a little bit later this hour, all right? But before we do, Mike, Sean Payton has won every game against the NFC South this year.
He's familiar with it.
Guys, he beat every team in our division. Yesterday, we concluded that. Bucks, Saints, Panthers. Here's the kicker, and this makes you think, this is why people think about Sean Payton the way they do. Denver has averaged 31 points in those 4 games against his former foes in this division. They've allowed 9. He beat the Bucks, us, and the Saints, and the Panthers. And Mike, they're scoring 31. They had 38 on us yesterday. What does Sean Payton know about this division that he owns this division the way he did when he was the head coach of the Saints?
I mean, he is a great coach. We know that. And he's got a quarterback that he's slowly developing. We made him look like John friggin' Elway yesterday.
We did.
You know, but he made good throws. He made good decisions. You can't fault that. You know, but, I mean, Sean Payton, he's got, like, he's got his quarterback. For whatever that was the last year with Russell, everything else, just bad fit. But that's a coach who starts with a P, ends with a K, but he gets it. And he certainly gets this division. Tampa Bay, I still think, has a chance to win this division. We can still gack this thing, guys. I know that we'd have to have one of the greatest collapses of all time, because the only way Tampa Bay wins this division is by having more wins than us, because we go head-to-head and we win every tiebreaker.
Yes, yes.
But we both play the Chargers, and then they've got a much easier schedule. And then we've got to play, as we've already mentioned, the Commanders and the Vikings, etc. So nothing is certain here, man. This defense, Carl, nothing's going to improve on this defense. Our get the quarterback down on the ground rate is one of the worst in the league. The only thing the Falcons defense does on average that's average is stopping the run game. That's about it.
Well, Mike, in the first half, and I hear it right now, guys are texting and tweeting at us. Find us. He's Mike Bell, ATL. I'm at Put 'Em Up. See Dukes, the radio show, Dukes and Bell 929. And, of course, follow this radio station at 929 The Game. Do you guys believe? Yes, I do think they can get this stuff corrected. But there are some things fundamentally right now, 11 weeks into the season, to Mike's point, that are not. We're not all of a sudden going to lead the league in sacks. That's not happening at this point. The first half of this game, Bo Nix was 17 of 19. That's 2 incompletions. For a buck 92 and 2 touchdowns. Guys, that's a stat line for most guys in a rookie season at the end of a game. That was his first half numbers. 2 incompletions? So this was a game where we came out lackluster. You heard Jesse say, I don't know, we got going late. And we laid down this performance that nobody should be proud of. And Coach said it at the end of the game, Mike, embarrassing day for the franchise. We got our butts kicked. I'm glad he admitted it, because we got our butts kicked.
And just one number, you know, we got 10 sacks. We did get a sack yesterday as one of the linemen got tripped by his own back. You realize we had 48 sacks last year, Carl?
Wow.
I mean, 42. Check that, 42. 42.
I'll still take it.
42 sacks. And I remember last year when we didn't keep Ryan Nielsen, I had a bunch of guys going, I can't believe we're not retaining Ryan Nielsen. I'm like, oh, let's just slow our roll. Not like he was Buddy Ryan. He is freaking Buddy Ryan compared to Jimmy Lake. We had Calais Campbell. We had Bud Dupree. This is on Fontenot for not getting your house in order and being scared about the quarterback situation. So you made no defensive moves in the first round. And you doubled down on quarterback, and now we got the worst defense in the league. This is on the GM and the coach for hiring a defensive coordinator who isn't that good.
Strong arm story of the day is next. Miles Garrett from Fox 5 joins us on Dukes and Bell. Oh, it's all about the Falcons, and we will talk about the Dogs as well. Stay there, because that was a hell of a win in Athens on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. Also, we've got a pair of tickets to Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin evening. It's Wednesday, December 11th at the Coca-Cola Roxy. Tickets on sale at LiveNation.com. Stay tuned. We'll give you a chance to go check that out here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We want to say good afternoon to our buddy, Miles Garrett. Fox 5 joining us here, and we're talking about the Falcons. Listen, we've been asking our listeners all day, Miles, about concerns. I am concerned that our quarterback hasn't thrown a touchdown in 2 weeks. Are you concerned about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely very easy to point to as being a big concern for this team. Right now, I'd say the defense is more of a concern from what I've viewed, at least at this point, because we know what Kirk Cousins can do, right? Like, we've seen what he's able to do this season. We've seen kind of who he is throughout the course of his career. You know, he has kind of had some stints where he's a little bit slow, and it looks like this is one of those right now. You know, obviously offensive line play has been a little bit of a factor, but yeah, I mean, you want to see Kirk produce, and he hasn't really done that as much the last couple of games. But I think the defense really is where this team needs to make its biggest adjustments, because where they're ranking right now as an overall unit just won't win you games, and it's kind of setting you up for a collapse down the stretch. They talked about winning the bye week, and that's something they absolutely have to do these next couple of days, because the schedule does not get any easier right now.
I got to be honest. I think we're getting 5 points from the bye week right now. We're so bad. It is Miles Garrett, guys, from Fox 5. The thing is about, you know, the pass rush, we just found, I looked at the numbers, I was literally dumbfounded. Like, literally, me and Carl last segment, Miles, you know, Ryan Nielsen, you know, it's not unusual for a new coach coming in not to retain anybody from the previous staff. You have your guys. And now, we did retain our special teams coach, and our special teams is no great shakes, but Nielsen had 48 sacks on that defense. Now, we lost Bud Dupree. We talked about we lost Calais Campbell. It just seems like, man, they found a way to get something out of guys like Ebba Cady. Do you feel that Jimmy Lake is not the right man for this job?
Yeah, and I think there were some discussions, you know, even when Jimmy Lake was hired, about, you know, whether or not this guy is the right hire. And of course, you know, there's still time to fix this. Jimmy's obviously been had a lot of support, rather, from the players, and, you know, even the players themselves said after the loss that, look, Jimmy, we had the right calls. It was just on us to execute. But like you said, I mean, the numbers don't really lie right now. Last in sacks, 30th in third down conversions, 25th in scoring. I mean, the numbers don't lie at this point. And, you know, you face some teams that you should be winning these battles with. And again, you're going back to talent. Matthew Judon has really been a no-show so far this season. You're expecting a lot of big things from him. And, you know, you go back to the homegrown guys. Arnold Ebiketie just has not been the guy that you were hoping him to be. You know, this was a guy that you were counting on to be that de facto pass rusher that you drafted, because the team has not really addressed that thus far in the draft under Terry Fontenot. He was really your highest picked guy on that side of the ball and the biggest need there at that pass rusher position. So he still hasn't really done exactly, I think, what they're hoping him to do. He's had some spurts where, you know, you kind of see maybe what Terry Fontenot and this defensive staff has been wanting to see with him. But at the end of the day, you have to execute. And you've got a red hot Chargers team coming in here to, you know, that's been carving up teams left and right. So you're going to have to fix this very, very quick in order to get back on track. Because if you don't, you know, this thing could take a tailspin pretty quick.
Miles Garrett, Fox 5, joining us here on Dukes and Bell. Let me ask you about the wide receivers. Guys are saying they feel like, you know, sometimes our guys don't get open, right? And that causes Kirk to hold on to it a little bit longer, and obviously he's taking sacks and getting pressures. And just as a group, like, where are you at with the wide receiving core? We spent a lot of time on Pitts, but even, you know, yesterday, the pick, I thought he tried to force it to Drake, and, you know, he ends up getting intercepted. As a group, what do you think about the guys that we have? And they've shown flashes, Miles, but, I mean, are they difference makers? Or do we have enough? Like, as you start to look at the end of this season and saying, okay, we're headed towards the playoffs, why should I feel confident about what we've been doing?
Yeah, depth, I think, has been a concern since, you know, you lose Rondale Moore there in the preseason. I think they were expecting him to kind of be a bigger role as your wide receiver three instead of a guy like, you know, Ray McCloud or Kadarius Hodge maybe having a bigger role. Was still uncertain about Casey Washington. But I think that loss kind of definitely hurt, obviously, the depth of this room. And having Darnell Mooney go down and, you know, his health being in question at least the last couple of games, I think it's kind of making that even more big as far as a depth perspective of being a concern, right? Because now all of a sudden Drake London and Ray-Ray McCloud are your two guys, and Ray-Ray McCloud, obviously, you know, the way this team and depth chart is set up, not your typical number two wide receiver. You know, makes you think back to 2020 when Matt Ryan had just a skeleton crew of receivers in that room, and he didn't really have, you know, a de facto wide receiver one. Luckily, this team still does have Drake London, and he is a very good receiver. And I think when Darnell Mooney is at full health, you know, I think the numbers don't lie that those two have proven to be the one of, if not the best wide receiver tandem in the NFL right now. I mean, they're right up there with guys like T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase. So I think the guys they have at starters are pretty good, but obviously, you know, the health of these guys could be a concern going down the line. And, you know, you mentioned that Kirk Cousins interception. That one, I think it's safe to say, was very much on Kirk Cousins, throwing into double, triple coverage there, trying to fit it in a spiral to Drake. But I think you could also go back to Kyle Pitts, too. I think there's, you know, if you look at some of the film, you know, talking about effort on some plays, I think you want to see a little bit more out of Kyle making an effort to kind of get some of these balls. And Kirk Cousins mentioned that, you know, I don't know if it was preseason, but talking about, you know, trying to get that chemistry going with Kyle Pitts as far as like, look, Kyle, I need you to be right here. You know, I'm trying to place the ball there. And we've seen some of that. Obviously, Kyle Pitts has played a lot better this year than in years past, and you can credit that to the quarterback play. But at the same time, you know, these guys have to be where they are and put forth a little bit more effort because Kirk's, you know, not going to be able to move that much. So he's going to have to get that ball out pretty quick.
That just did it. We were talking about earlier is Myles Garrett from Fox 5 joins us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. He's up there at camp all the time. We got the bye week now. It doesn't get any easier. You know, you got a bunch of tough road games. The Commanders look really dynamic later in the season. We go to Minnesota. And off the jump, we got the Chargers. Look what the Chargers did last night in that first half against the Bengals, and they hung on for the win. We got dynamic pass rush coming at us, big-time playmakers, good coaches. So, I mean, we're not going to blow this. I mean, the only way we blow this division is by the Bucs having more wins than us, and they'd have to literally go 6-1.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And it's funny, we brought it up at the beginning of this segment that, you know, going into this season, you know, you looked at this schedule on paper, they all said, you know, the easiest schedule in football. But I don't think anyone was expecting a team like the Broncos, the Chargers, the Vikings, and the Commanders to all of a sudden be these playoff threats like they are. Not just threats, like potential contenders here because of how they're being coached and these players like Jaden Daniels and obviously Jim Harbaugh, what he's doing out in L.A. at this point. But, yeah, no, I mean, you got to make adjustments. That's what this bye week is going to have to be about, and you got to find this solution very quickly. And I think, like we said, we've kind of hit all the talking points as far as what needs to be fixed, because I think it's really obvious the most egregious thing thus far has just been the defensive play and getting pressure on the quarterback. It's something the Falcons, for some reason, have not been able to do, it seems like, for two decades, back to John Abraham. And obviously we thought that this Judon thing could potentially work out, and who knows if it's a coaching thing or if it's a player thing. And I don't know if we will know until the end of the season, but yeah, I mean, it's something you definitely have to fix, and you got to fix fast.
This hour brought to you by our friends at Buffalo Wild Wings. Guys, we're B-dubs. It's football. It's Dukes and Bell. We're talking Falcons with our buddy Myles Garrett from Fox 5. Let me ask you, what area are you most confident in? Because yesterday we got demolished in every area. Special teams, everything, just nothing was working. Young Waku hits a couple of field goals. Okay, Mike said it. It's his job.
Right.
What do you feel confident in?
I still feel confident in this rushing attack. I mean, just because of the guys who are there. You know, obviously we know what Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier can do together. Now, the offensive line's health, I think, is a big aspect of that. And Kirk Cousins is a big aspect of that, too, when you talk about getting Bijan involved in the passing game. I really liked what Zach Robinson has been able to do to utilize both of those backs. You know, you kind of use Algier as your north and south runner and get Bijan in space, maybe a little bit in the passing game. I think that's worked a lot this year as opposed to, you know, what we saw last year, kind of seemingly using them both the same way. I think they're both very different runners. But I think that's where the basis of this offense is set up to where they can win games. Once you set up that rushing attack with those two guys, then that passing game opens up big time, setting up the play action, which I think is what Zach Robinson was hoping to have this offense based on. So if you lose those two guys and that element of your offensive attack is kind of out of the way, then it's forcing Kirk Cousins to win you games. And especially if he's under pressure, you know, that's a problem because we know Kirk isn't able to move as well as he maybe has in the past, of course, with that Achilles injury. So you want to have that element of your game still good. And I do think it is still good because of obviously the talent of those two backs and their health being still very good at this point. And I think they need to reinvigorate that a little bit here these next couple of games, because I do think that's where their strength is.
All right, Miles, I know that the bye week, guys will rest up. It would be rough if Darnell Mooney is still banged up based on what he can do. I mean, Carl said it earlier. I mean, number one concern, you can only pick one. Is it defense or is it that offense and Cousins?
Right now, I'd say defense because at least at certain points, the offense has produced and produced very well. The defense has got to get those sacks. They got to increase those pressure rates and get some more turnovers too. I mean, that goes hand in hand. We know Jesse Bates is very capable of doing stuff like that and Justin Simmons as well. So, yeah, I'd say defense, specifically pressure rate.
Blitz, Carl, we got to maybe just let it all hang out. You know,
go after it.
Right. Let it all hang out.
Well, one of our listeners said the same thing about with us being down. Again, Mike Hughes offered Kevin King, instead of playing conservative, let's just go after it. And you know what? If he hits some of these shots down the field, great. But let's blitz him. And we didn't do enough of that yesterday. Hey, great job as always, Miles. We'll be checking you out, man, on Fox 5. Appreciate you stopping by.
Appreciate it, fellas. Have a good afternoon.
You got it. Now, like, it's not Jimmy Lake's fault these dudes couldn't tackle, because to your point, there was the home run ball, but there's also a lot of the stuff underneath. We said 199 yards of the Bo Nix passing yards were yards after the catch. That's just blown tackles all over the place.
Yeah, Mike, that can't happen. If you're going to have these guys catch balls in front of you,
which is kind of the definition of your defense.
You got to tackle these guys. Hey, we want to give you a chance right now to win these Led Zeppelin tickets, guys. Caller number 7 at 404-726-0929. We're giving you a chance to go check out Jason Bonham's Led Zeppelin evening. That's Wednesday, December 11th at the Coca-Cola Roxy. Tickets on sale at LiveNation.com. Caller 7, 404-726-0929. You're going to win those tickets. We're coming back. How about them dogs? Georgia handled their business on Saturday night, and Tennessee is a very good football team. It's Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, as we talk about what went down and why this was such an important win for Georgia, who now sits at 8-2 and 6-2 in the SEC. Mike, this gets down to they don't play any more SEC games. And so now we have to wait and see what happens with Texas and Texas A&M. And believe it or not, you know, Bama, which might be in the best position right now to play in the SEC championship game. So, for Georgia, it's win and then worry about all this other stuff. And that's what they did on Saturday night.
And, you know, just real quick, we're going to talk about the game itself. I've told you last week, maybe it's not the worst thing to be in the SEC championship, because you don't know what that means with a third loss and how the College Football Playoff Committee is going to affect. You might be better off just sitting at home and getting somebody at home in Sanford Stadium.
And that may be the situation that Georgia is in. 31-17, guys. This Tennessee defense hadn't allowed 20 points by anybody to allow them to score 20 points on them all season. Georgia not only did that, Mike, I thought they did it in a fashion where we saw some of the things we've been wondering about all season long. Tight ends got involved. Oscar Delp. You saw Georgia get sacks. You saw Carson Beck use his legs in this game, which is something we hadn't seen a whole lot of.
Right, the back shoulder throw, that was a huge play. Now, the Arian Smith drop was just kind of like, you, as a dog fan, you're like, you got to be kidding me. And then Tennessee gets off to a 10-0 lead. And then Carson Beck, and again, he was not rattled. And again, maybe being at home helped him, you know, get back into a groove. But you talked about it. We mentioned it on Thursday and Friday show. If the wide receivers are hurt or can't make the catch, get the other guys in. And Oscar Delp with a couple of scores, big catches, and those throws, tight windows, having the confidence to zip it. And everybody is talking about the first down where he basically, pow, drops his shoulder into the defender and kind of set the tone, and everybody got amped on that.
No doubt. Let's hear Carson Beck, or at least Kirby Smart, talk about Carson Beck on runs, the runs that he made.
We challenged him, but with the backs out, that we had some plays for him. And sometimes you gotta man up. I texted him early in the week and said, if we do this, are you down with it? And he said, I'm going to get it, coach. Just give me the ball.
Yeah, I mean, basically, this might be a part of the game plan. And he agreed. I mean, listen, I think everybody's willing to do whatever it takes to try to win. Carson's no different. The struggles, though, when you talk about 12 picks, you know, in the last six games, that's the issue. That's what everybody was wondering about. Guys, he played clean on Saturday night, which also helped. Mike, what about the secondary? Because, again, I thought this was a big part of this game that kind of goes unspoken, unseen. Like, we worry about the Becks and the running backs and the wide receivers. Secondary played a hell of a game against Tennessee, and Kirby acknowledged it.
I was really proud of the secondary, because you're in some really tough cover environments out there and like on space. And some of it, they helped us. I think they dropped some balls that were like bang, bang plays, but they didn't get behind us. And that's the big achievement.
You know, we talked about the linebacking core, you know, how bad they looked against Ole Miss, right, at times, and just not being the same thing we talked about with the Falcons last week, or this week against Denver. Chaz Chambliss with two sacks. I thought, you know, dialing up the blitzes, I thought that was solid. We talked how big is Smile Mundon going to be in this one. Certainly he was, and Kirby just talked about the secondary because, you know, they're super athletic receivers.
That play you mentioned about Carson Beck, this is what he said about it. It woke him up, and you said it. It woke the team up.
And I don't know. It kind of woke me up, you know, get hit a little bit. Yeah. But no, I thought it might have juiced us up a little bit. I mean, it was a good little run. So
people talk about it. We mentioned earlier in the season, guys love this guy. Teammates love him. And when he was getting killed, and Kirby addressed it, getting killed, yeah, because like half all those polls we ran about asking Georgia fans, half of Bulldog Nation is like lukewarm on him.
When you're not playing well, you're not playing well.
And that's we're beyond the student athlete thing. We're in this weird gray area now of the semi-pro, you know, with endorsements. So you can criticize him and make a bad person. But Carl, don't you feel he got his mojo back? His last SEC game, he looked like the guy we thought going into the season was there.
I am calling Turtle. Carson Beck a bum.
Yes.
I never said that.
I do think he did, and I want it to continue. Mike, this is the only way they get there. What you saw Saturday night is the only way they get there. And what I mean by there is another chance to play for a national championship. It's not going to be that they won't make the adjustments or that they don't have the talent. We've said this, but they just hadn't put it together all season long.
But nobody's perfect. I mean, the critics of Texas say Texas, you know, may lose to Texas A&M. You know, that's a physical natured game.
They might, but I doubt it.
And then you look at
they couldn't run away from Arkansas, Carl.
Arkansas is a rivalry game. That's a game that goes back 100 years.
It goes back to Frank Broyles and Keith Jackson.
That is a game in which Arkansas fans get up for, just
don't
like A&M
don't
fans.
Get defensive.
No, I'm not. I'm trying to explain to Oren, who obviously doesn't know the history of this Texas-Arkansas game.
I just saw Ole Miss put up 60-some-odd points on the same Arkansas team.
Because Arkansas didn't care about Ole Miss.
You know, you realize
if they can beat Texas, that's a feather in their cap.
Now,
always has been.
Your only win over a top 10 opponent. Nobody's in the top 10 anymore. Michigan's out of the top 10. Yeah. Vanderbilt's out of the top 10.
That's why these early season wins, you know, they go, top 10. It doesn't look great at the end of the year.
Right.
But here's the deal. And Texas is 5-1. A&M's 5-1. Somebody's got to lose that game, and that's going to catapult one of those teams into the SEC championship.
This is like the biggest game in Texas in how long? When you think about like the rivalry, how Texas A&M took their ball and left, when Texas obviously became the big powerhouse, their own TV network, all that.
He hadn't played in 12 years or whatever it is, Mike. So, yeah, I mean, the fact that both teams are good and that it's worth something, if both teams were 3-whatever, nobody would care except for the people there. It's such a big deal now because it's like, wait a minute, one of these teams is coming to the SEC championship game? So, yeah, I think it's a big deal. Let's get back to Georgia real quick. I want to mention this because Georgia had 453 yards, guys, 24 first downs.
Do you expect him to throw? If I told you he was going to throw 40 times, do you think you'd win that game?
No, I did not. And that's why and they were 8-13 on third down. All the things that you go into a game where you say, man, their defense is pretty good. They dominated this game, guys. Georgia really did defensively or offensively against a very good defense. And so it gives me, Mike, pause to say they have everything they need to get there.
The Ole Miss game, now, the only thing it might do is keep you out of the SEC championship, which maybe isn't the worst thing in the world, but Tate Ratledge getting some of there was some badassery on the offensive line, right? Would you agree with Georgia? And we talked about Frazier not fumbling the football, Frazier getting in the end zone as well.
It was big. Guys, one of the drives that I thought was the defining drive was a 92-yard drive, really with about 2:26 left. And they drove the length of the field and pounded Tennessee. And they got down there, and then it was like, touchdown to cap it off, and it was one of those defining drives. If you ask me, like, that's what I expect from Georgia right there. Domination up front, and we talked about it. They needed to do that. Line of scrimmage is where this game was won. Real quick, Carson Beck talking about he stood up in front of the group, Mike, and talked to them earlier in the week.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really feel any pressure, to be honest. So I stood up in front of the team on Monday, and, you know, I just kind of, you know, talked to them about how I felt about, you know, how our season's gone, you know, whether that's whatever's happened has happened, you know, and that all we can control is what we can control moving forward. Sorry, my voice is gone. All we can control is what we're, you know, controlling in the future, so.
Now, again, for Dog fans who are still hung up on the College Football Playoff Committee and where they're going to be right now, they're eighth, Carl, in the AP poll, in the coaches poll. Their strength of schedule amongst all the teams that are still in that top 12 is the best. They're eighth, and it depends on different strengths of schedule. Depends on who you're going with. I'm going with the guys at the College Football Network. Georgia's eighth, Bama's 12th, Texas is 14th. Ohio State's 18th. The only SEC school that's in this mix that doesn't have a great record in the top as far as schedule is Ole Miss at 50th. Indiana's 66th. Imagine Indiana loses to Ohio State.
They've not played any ranked teams.
You're going to keep them in that top 12? Well, because they're in that Big Ten, and the Big Ten always finds a way to weasel in more juice.
So here is the argument for Indiana, and this is going to like drive people crazy. Beat Ohio State, they have an argument to be number one. They're undefeated.
Right.
And you just beat arguably the best team that you will face all season until your Big Ten championship. They will have an argument for number one. Lose to Ohio State. Some people say they don't even deserve to be a top 12.
Texas A&M, by the way, their strength of schedule is 24th.
Yeah.
So, but Indiana at 66. I just love the idea. I said earlier, we talked about it in Guy Talk. I forget who the journalist who said it. He goes, if Indiana has to come to Sanford Stadium, it will set the program back 10 years.
So here's what's crazy, Mike. Does the committee love good stories? Because if they do, and even if Indiana loses to Ohio State, that's a really good story this year. It's a great college football story. You know what else is another great college football story? Mm-hmm. Colorado. The committee, and they've got their destiny is right in front of them. If they went out, they're going to get to the college football playoff. But my point is, if you think that this is about TV shows and interest and, oh, what a story, Indiana's kind of one of those things this year.
Well, depending on how the college football playoff looks, the strength of schedule has got to matter. I mean, when we get into the eye test, and you and I always are trying to figure out what the hell are these guys looking for in this college football playoff committee when they give us our latest ranking tomorrow. Notre Dame's strength of schedule is 52nd, okay? Miami of Florida, 64th. Indiana, we mentioned, is 66th. How about Notre Dame coming to Sanford Stadium under the lights in this playoff in December? Wouldn't that be epic television?
Well, that's what we believe.
Because Notre Dame's strength of schedule is crap.
Yeah.
They don't deserve to host a home game, even though they've got one less loss.
They could lose against Army this weekend.
And
I know people don't believe that, but
I know.
Army's really good, and I think that's going to be a closer game than people expect. We'll see. But this is why they got games to play. Georgia, it's UMass, and then Georgia Tech. That's how they finish the season. All right, we're coming back. Want to hear from our quarterback, Kirk Cousins, about what went down yesterday? You will. And Jesse Bates, our starting safety, talked about where it went wrong on the defensive side of the ball. Stay right there. It's next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.